Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Morbid early and ad-free. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Travel's great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com or call 877-290-1880. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel. Hey guys, I have to tell you about this all-in-one shake that I'm freaking loving. It's called Cachava. I love saying it. It's actually hands down the best thing that I've found to help me get all my essential nutrients into one day. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics. In other words, literally everything that your body craves to feel your best. And I know what you're thinking, something that good for me cannot possibly taste good. Wrong. That's where Cachava really earns their over 52,000 five-star reviews. It actually tastes freaking amazing. It's very creamy and smooth, and it comes together with just water. And it comes in five delicious flavors. Personally, vanilla and chai are my personal favorites, but it also comes in chocolate, matcha, and coconut acai, which I still need to try. Some people like to drink it as part of a healthy breakfast or lunch, and other people love it as a protein-packed snack before or after a workout. It's really perfect for that because it has 25 grams of plant protein per serving. Personally, I like to add mine to my overnight oats. I add a scoop and I mix it all up to get a little more protein into my oats. And literally, I can have that for breakfast and feel satiated, nourished, beautiful, functioning, all throughout my day. It's incredible. Please send me more of it because I love it so much. It makes me feel very, very good. And guess what, guys? Cachava is offering our listeners 10% off for a limited time. Just go to cachava.com/morbid, spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/morbid. Hey, weirdos, I'm Ash.
And I'm Elena.
And this is Morbid.
And it's one of those silly fun episodes.
It's a listener tale, meaning that it's brought to you by you, for you, from you, and all about you.
And you always bring it.
Yeah, it's like bring it on.
It's bring it on. That's exactly it.
Missy's the poo, so take a big whiff.
Oh, Liz Dushk.
Did I fuck that? I think I might have like fucked that quote up. But...
did you? No, I think you're good.
Missy's the poo, so take it. No, I think I did. I think I got it.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay.
I have faith in yourself.
I shall.
But that's Liz Dushk, isn't it?
So, Liz Dushk.
If you don't know what we're talking about, go listen to Scream.
The Scream Pod.
Do it.
All right. Well, we don't banter. We banter as fuck, but we don't talk about much in the beginning of Listener Tales. We do banter.
Because it's just fun.
It's just fun. But this Listener Tale, let's start this motherfucker off. It's called I Missed the Boat on the Meta Murderer episode.
Oh no.
I know.
Also, you drew that right out.
Yeah, I think I went brain dead for a second.
I was worried. For a second, I was like, are you okay?
The answer is a constant...
the boat.
The answer to are you okay, Ash, is a constant nah. But anyways, it's not about me. This is about somebody that I don't know if I can use their name yet. So let's see. Hello, you lovely weirdos. Let me start off like everybody else by saying how much I love your podcast.
We love you.
Thank you. I love you. I love your podcast. Like so many others, I started listening a couple years ago during the plague, and I had the immediate feeling of OMG, it's my people. Oh, I love that. We are your people. You're our people.
You're our people.
You ladies actually have me excited for an hour-long commute every day. Feel free to use my name. All right, Courtney. Also, Elena, when you lost Bailey, I full-on ugly cried in the car. I lost my beautiful pit bull, Thumper, in October last year, and the pain of the loss of a furry family member is like no other. I fully felt your love for Bailey in that moment, and I'm so, so sorry for your loss. I attached some pics of Thumper to aww over, and we are Thumper.
Thumper. I'm so sorry you lost Thumper.
Thumper is beautiful.
He really is.
Oh, he has like the kindest eyes. Oh, and your kitty cat looks like my Luxie.
What a cutie patootie.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's hard. Okay, so I had started typing this listener tale, and for a lot of reasons, I had been debating on sending it in for several weeks. And then you had the Met a Murderer episode, and holy shit, I was like, get out of my head, guys.
And we were like, no.
And I was like, never. I so appreciate how you share all these listener tales from such a place of compassion and non-judgment.
Hell yeah. Always.
It has inspired me to share this story, even though it might not paint me in the best light. It's all right. It's in the past.
Shit happens, man.
As long as you didn't murder anybody, it's all good.
None of us are perfect. Nobody's not one perfect. Among us.
You'll live and you'll learn it.
Some people pretend that they are.
And those people suck eggs.
Yeah, some people are like, I've never made a mistake in my whole life.
And those are always the people that have made 400 yeah. gajillion mistakes more than you.
So don't you worry.
Oh, I was going to sing like, don't worry. That's what I was going to say.
Oh, I was like, what's happening over there? Are you all right?
No, actually, you know what? I just realized I didn't finish my coffee today.
Okay.
And I've had like no caffeine.
We need to charge Ash's batteries.
I'm drinking with one of those pineapple refreshers now from Starbucks. So that should wake me up. But unfortunately, there's ice in it, so I can't drink it while we're recording.
Should refresh you.
Yeah, it should, but I can't drink it because I don't have a straw.
And you know what? I appreciate that because we were on a Zoom once with somebody who's drinking out of something.
Yeah, we were. It
was, you know exactly what I'm talking about. They were drinking out of a cup with ice in it, and it was one of those like metal-y kind of cups,
they
a tumbler.
Also, hold on, because they also weren't talking. So like, it's fine. Whatever noise you want to make yeah. is fine on mute.
Yeah, but they were literally like... all the ice was clanging against the side of the metal thing, and then they'd take a big gulp and chew on the ice into the microphone. And I was like, you have so much audacity. Yeah, right now. Like, I was like, holy shit.
You own the entire audacity program.
Yeah, that
you're also
was rough.
Talking to two people, like one more than the other, with misophonia.
Oh, it was making me lose my damn mind. But so thank you for thinking about that.
Thank you. Oh, I was saying thank you to the listener. I was like, yeah, thanks, Courtney, for
but
not drinking my drink.
Thank you, Courtney.
Oh, shit. All right. I hope this... I hope this can serve as a cautionary tale to somebody else who might be going through a stupid person phase. Oh, God, I have so many of those stories. Seriously. Even as I read this, I found myself shaking my head and saying, Courtney, you dumb bitch. But we live and we learn if we're lucky. So here we go. All right.
Courtney, I already love you.
I love you too. And I'll make you feel better. Can I just tell my dumb bitch story that I told you this morning?
Yeah.
So my friend was over the other night. Hi, Kaylee. And we were outside and having a fire. And I saw a white squirrel go by. And I was like, oh my God, it's a white squirrel. And Drew and Kaylee just look at me. And Kaylee goes, you dumb bitch. That's a skunk.
You dumb bitch.
I was dying. So yeah. If you think it's a white squirrel, it's probably not. Back to Courtney. I was 27 in 2011 when I was invited to a Mardi Gras themed club party in Denver by some burner friends. Fuck yeah. For those not in the know, a burner is one who attends Burning Man. I am not exactly, nor was I then, one of these types of hippie party animals. However, in my 20s, I was a work hard, play harder kind of person. Relatable. Now, I'm much more of a work hard, Netflix hard kind of person. Also relatable.
Elena.
That's who Elena's always been. Yeah. But at the time, I had friends in the community, and they threw hella fun parties. Do the kids say hella these days? I don't know.
You can.
I still say hella.
I support it.
I like to think of myself as like a almost kid, you know? Like, I'm not that far away from it, and I say hella.
You're the resident kid in this office, so.
Yeah, I'm the resident kid in this office for sure.
There you go.
Anyway, fun-loving artsy folk and good vibes all around. Two of these burners and I went way back to the high school days of slumber parties and sneaking underage vodka shots. I had met most of the members of their immediate friend group at other events here and there. This event was a good one. There was a different DJ on each floor, aerial dancers, fire jugglers, and lighted art installations.
That sounds awesome.
Fuck yeah.
I would love to watch that from afar.
Alina's like, I would watch that on TV, kind of like how I'm watching fucking Woodstock 99. Didn't want to go, but I want to see it later.
I'll watch it later.
Libations. I love the word
libations.
That's a great
word.
Yeah, I got to use that more.
It just feels like classier. It does. I don't know what it is.
I'm going to invite you over for like a libation party.
A libration or two.
Yeah. Libations were flowing freely, and weed smoke that swirled with machine fog was illuminated by laser lights lights, creating an intoxicating haze in the air as the music bumped. God, I feel at home. We were all dancing and having a great night when a cute skeleton showed up and started chatting up people in our friend group.
Oh no, I would have fallen for this too. Whatever you're falling for, I would have fallen for.
Yeah. Did I mention that this was a costume party? Seems to be an important detail now. Masks, face paint, the works. But back to cute skeleton guy. He was a great dancer and giving the vibes of the singer in the band Hocus Pocus.
Okay, girl, you just got me. I have not read this before. I have said it from day one.
That guy's
hot. The singer of that band has something. He has something.
He has a je ne sais quoi.
He has a je ne sais quoi. I can't put my finger on it, but I've always thought he was hot, and I don't know why.
He has a sexy voice.
The voice, and even when he talks.
That's what I mean. Like, I'm not even talking singing. Like, he's a great singer.
Courtney.
Yeah, Courtney. You get it.
Courtney. We get it.
And for those that don't, Courtney's talking about the skeleton singer of the band in Hocus Pocus before Winifred takes the stage to sing, I put a spell on you.
That one.
Yeah. Obvs. I was totally into it when he started dancing in my direction. I love dancing.
You know what?
I want to dance right now.
I'm into this.
I'm so into this. My friend from school told me that Skeleton's name was Travis and that he's super cool. Yeah, he sounds like a Travis. He's super cool. Travis's always are for a minute.
Yeah.
And newishly single. Also, same. Wink, wink. Wink. Also, same to like that Travis's are always single.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. I didn't mean that I was single.
Oh, Lord.
I was not saying that. I am engaged. Did I ever mention that? Oh, God. Also, everyone there seemed to know him. Of course they did. We ended up dancing together the rest of the evening. And by the time the last call rolled around, Travis the skeleton offered me a ride home since I had been drinking and smoking pot all night. Oh, poking smot all night, excuse me. Looking back, he was also most certainly drinking all night, but didn't seem overly intoxicated to my drunk ass, so that seemed like a great idea. The friend group and my good friend that I'd known since high school were all very encouraging of this connection, so of course, I left with Travis. I don't recall too much of the ride. I remember that it was after 2 a.m. and he drove a van. Red flag.
Uh-oh.
He told me about... Oh.
Wow.
Oh, do you know who she's talking about?
No.
He told me about his organic granola company. You remember that case?
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm not going to give Courtney. It away yet for anybody who might not have caught on yet, but we've covered this case, this Travis granola man case.
Whoa, Court. Okay, let's
go. Yep. I specifically recall him telling me about the evils of gluten. Oh, God. Hippies. We ended up going to his bakery. I recall there were steel food prep tables and big barrels, I assume, for grains of sorts. There was a couch in the back and an office area. We ended up spending the night there together. This was a completely consensual one-night stand. Perhaps not my proudest moment, but hey, it happened. What can I say?
Don't feel bad about it.
We've all been there. It's funny. When I considered sharing this story, I went online to find Facebook posts from that evening. I couldn't find any pics with Travis in them, but I looked cute as hell that night. I mean,
thought you did.
I'm sure you did. Well, what did you dress up as? I want to know. And then Courtney said, I mean, it doesn't hurt that I was 10 years younger, but I would have hooked up with me too. I digress.
Get it, girl.
When Travis took me back to my car in the morning, he asked for my number and insisted that we should get dinner later that week. I was about to be like, oh my God, so nice.
Wow.
I gave him my number, but I was quite certain that I would not hear from him because, well, let's just call a spade here. My friend called me the next day and asked how my night was with... Oh, sorry. And my friend called me the next day and asked how my night with Travis Forbes went.
I'm screaming.
I told her all about the granola, haha, and the hookup, and that he likely wouldn't call me back. Well, I was correct. My cute dancing skeleton from that night never did call me. So now we get to the true crime of it all. It was a month later when I would hear the name Travis Forbes again. I'm like shaking right now.
I cannot believe this.
I was doing stuff around the house and had the news playing in the background the days before podcast when they said it. It was immediately familiar. Enough so that I stopped folding laundry to watch, but I couldn't place it at first. I think the news anchor mentioned a granola company and it finally all clicked. I recognized my skeleton, sans makeup, in an orange jumpsuit. Yes, he had skeleton makeup on when I hooked up with him. Don't judge. He was still cute.
You literally don't have to say don't judge because we totally get it, my dude. We get it. We're over here. That skeleton in Hocus Pocus, like, hot. I get it. Yeah.
With the makeup on.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Then they showed the mourning family and the face of the beautiful 19-year-old girl who Travis Forbes raped, murdered, and buried about 40 miles outside of Denver. Yeah.
Oh, this case is so sad.
It is. Her name was Kenya Monhe. She was She was beautiful.
Oh, she was breathtaking.
And she seemed like one of my friends. Like, yeah. I feel like she just seemed like a friend that was in your friend group.
You know? Remember this one perfectly now.
She went missing on March 31st, 2011. My Facebook pictures of that party were dated March 20th, 2011.
Wow.
Less than 2 weeks apart. This charming fucker who knew everybody at that party and said that goddamn gluten was evil, raped and murdered a girl 11 days after I hooked up with him.
Oh my God.
Fucking ew, David. At least I know why he never called me. He was a murderer.
Oh.
So awful. After Kenya went missing, he was initially called for questioning because they had exchanged text messages about meeting up that night. Travis told detectives some crap that he did see her that night, but he dropped her off at a gas station or something and she went off with somebody else. Neither the detectives nor the family of Kenya Monhe believed Travis's story about his interactions with her that night. On top of that, there was some pretty damning surveillance footage outside the bakery that showed Travis roll a large white cooler into the freezer of the bakery and then carry a roll of carpet from his van.
He's so disgusting.
He really is. Followed by footage of him carrying what looks like a bottle of bleach to his van. It then shows him disconnect the cameras.
Oh, I remember this so perfectly now.
And you get to that part and you're like, it's gonna show you doing that, yeah. You idiot. He was also seen burning something in a barrel. His van was completely bleached clean and the carpet had been replaced when detectives searched it. They didn't have anything to hold him on in July of 2011. Oh, excuse me. They didn't have anything to hold him on. So in July of 2011, Travis Forbes was a free man, free to beat and rape another woman named Lydia Tillman. When I say beat, I mean... Man, this was brutal.
Yes.
It really was. He shattered her jaw and strangled her. One article said that her family could barely recognize her identity. Sorry. Her to identify her at first, except for the tattoo on her leg. He then covered her body in bleach, set her apartment on fire, and left her for dead. Lydia's a fucking hero, though, yep. And she woke up enough to escape the fire by jumping out of her second-story apartment window. She ended up suffering a stroke and was in a coma for 5 weeks. I'll attach some news articles about her badassery. It's totally worth the time to read her incredibly inspiring story.
It really is.
Fast forward, Forbes eventually agreed to lead detectives to Kenya Monhe's body on the condition that he would not be charged as a sex offender.
I remember this.
Mm-hmm.
This made me so angry.
And it makes you so angry because you understand like why they have to give them these deals so that they can get them in prison. But it's like
so frustrating.
God, like he should have gone to prison a sex offender.
Yeah.
And he would not receive the death penalty. That was another reason he wanted it. This was 5 months after her disappearance. From what I've read, her exact cause of death could not be determined by autopsy due to the level of decomposition. Yep. During the interrogation, when he finally confessed, Travis admitted to taking advantage of her when she was passed out. And he said, she kind of came to and she realized that we had sex. And then she started hitting me and I started hitting her back. And then she started to scream and I strangled her. I killed her.
Jesus.
He cut her clothes off and burned them in a barrel. He bleached everything else that she touched. He's now serving a life sentence without the possibility of parole. And after all of this hitting the news, I talked to my friends and everyone in the burner community. They were completely shocked. The Travis they all knew was a fun, nice guy. He was smart, he was well-read, charismatic, and a good dancer. The Travis that I met that night was too. Now, I'm sure everyone thinks this about themselves, but I consider myself to be a decent judge of character. I've certainly been in circumstances where I got a bad feeling to nope the hell out and have done so. I never felt unsafe that night. Not once. Not a bad vibe or a gut feeling or anything. Even when I left with Travis, all these people vouched for him and there were a whole bunch of witnesses who watched us leave together, which furthered my disillusion of safety. I still like to go out and have a good time on occasion, but I've made some changes to my lifestyle after this. I realize how lucky I am that my version of the story has a very boring ending, that it is nothing more than a story of a foolish hookup with a stranger after a party. When I watched Kenya's family on the news, I couldn't help but picture my family and what it would look like to have them on the news mourning their missing loved one, and it broke my heart. Not only did I feel so stupid, I felt shame in my selfishness and my overall carelessness. I always wondered if my foolish hookup is what saved my life. If I would have said no to Travis that night, would I have been another rape and murder victim? Maybe not. There are a lot of witnesses of our whereabouts after all. I guess I'll never know the answer to that. So that's my story. I'm no journalist, so I've attached some links to some of the articles that I read to fill in any gaps should you care to read them. I sincerely apologize for the lackluster grammar and run-on sentences. Also, tenses are hard. Tenses are hard. True. I go in and out of them all the time. Keep it weird, but not so weird that you hook up with a murderous skeleton just because he's cute and a good dancer and your friends say he's safe. Much love to you all, Courtney.
Courtney, that is a wild story.
I know. And you know what? Like, back to the whole, like, judge of character thing. I'm sure you are a good judge of character. But the thing is, like, the substances can alter your judgment, you know? So yeah, it wasn't that you're not a bad, that you're a bad judge of character. It's just you were having fun that night.
Well, and on top of that, all your friends knew him.
Exactly.
And vouched for him. Like, he was a good liar. Mm-hmm. He was a good chameleon.
Yep.
Sometimes people, like, you really can't trust people.
No, you can't.
You really can't, especially if you don't know someone, and even if you do know them, you can't always trust everybody. It's like, and that's a hard lesson to learn, and I think it's one that you continue learning through life. So,
definitely.
Like, don't feel bad. Like, you didn't do anything wrong. You did something millions of people do every day.
Exactly.
And wow, I'm sorry that you went through that, because that must have been, like, a very traumatic thing to actually deal with once you realized. So I'm sorry that you had to deal with that, and damn, what a story.
I know, that's a lot. I should look up what episode we covered that on.
Yeah, we should.
Hang on. Episode 220. That case was so, so, so sad. And then Lydia Tillman at the end is, like, wild.
Yeah, it's a really sad story. But as soon as, when you said the granola and you said it again, I was like, wait a second.
I think that's what, like, everybody remembers.
Yeah.
Like, when you say it with Travis.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thank you, Courtney. Now on to the next one, which was sent to us by Amy. She said we can use her name. Thank you, Amy.
Your email picture is adorable.
It really is. And it's titled, I Was Almost One of Them.
Oh.
Which is very ominous.
Is that a new theme?
I feel like it is. All right. Let's see. It says, let me go to the beginning of this.
It says, hi, ladies.
Hi, ladies. First of all, I want to preface this by saying this may be long and I'm sorry.
No.
And by telling you that the last month of my life, well, really the last 6 months, but definitely the last month, has been almost unbearable.
Oh no.
On May 1st, I lost my dad after a long battle of dementia. Oh, I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry.
We really lost him years ago, but last November, we put him in hospice knowing there was nothing more we could do to help him. He suffered a lot, and we suffered along with him. Holding his hand and talking to him as he passed away was the hardest moment of my life, but knowing that he was no longer in pain or confusion was an actual comfort. To anyone who has a loved one dealing with Alzheimer's or dementia, I see you. You aren't alone. Oh, I'm so sorry. That's a nightmare.
I can't imagine having to go through that.
The next day, after watching my dad pass, I had my first ultrasound appointment as I found out I was pregnant 9 weeks prior. Unfortunately, I found out that I was dealing with a missed miscarriage. Oh, I'm so sorry. I won't go into the details of the physical and mental pain I endured over the next 2 weeks, but it was, again, almost unbearable. 2 weeks after that, I came down with COVID. Luckily, it was pretty mild, but it just felt like another overwhelming thing.
Because it was. Oh, my God.
I'm so sorry. I have dealt with miscarriages, so I know how that feels.
That's
and I'm
horrible.
Really sorry you went through that.
And they say it comes in threes, but, like, wow, that's a fucking trifecta.
That's it. That's the trio. All this is to say two things. One, I continued to listen to you ladies throughout, and you provided me with much-needed laughs and distractions.
Oh, good.
Thank you so much for the entertainment you provide to all of us. I hope you know just how much joy you bring to us listeners.
That's really nice. I know, because sometimes it feels good to hear that.
Two, the story I'm about to tell you just proves what a caring man my father was to me and my sisters as we grew up. We meant absolutely everything to him, and after what happened to me, he was so passionate about keeping us safe. Him and my mom completely uprooted their lives to give us a different sort of childhood.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I love that you had amazing parents.
I know. Everybody should.
So here we go. My parents were born and raised in Chicago, Illinois. Crazy tidbit, but their first house as a married couple was a block away from John Wayne Gacy during the actual time of his killings. Oof.
For real, oof.
For real. My dad spent his entire career up until this point at the Chicago Tribune, starting as a copy boy and at this time working as a foreign editor. What a badass.
I have a subscription to the Chicago Tribune.
He was kind of a big deal in the world of print journalism. That's badass.
Hell yeah, go dad.
My mom was a kick-ass pediatric nurse.
Hell yeah, go mom.
This is a cool couple. They both switched on and off working nights, so I definitely had plenty of time with each of them throughout the days.
That's awesome. So cool.
My very favorite afternoons were when my dad would pick me up from preschool and we would go grab Happy Meals from McDonald's and bring them to the park. Oh. Those were the best times. This particular night, my mom was working and my dad was home with us. I was 5 years old and my sisters were 9 and 11. We actually lived in a suburb of Chicago at this point, not the same place as the John Wayne Gacy shit, shivers. And though I don't remember much about it, I do remember feeling like it was a pretty nice and safe neighborhood. It was like any other night. My dad put me to bed by reading to me, which was a nightly ritual he did until I was almost in junior high.
Stop.
He said goodnight, turned off the light, and closed the door. Oh. We lived in a 3-floor house, so bedrooms were on the top floor, kitchen and living area on the main floor, and there was a finished basement. My dad and sisters retreated to the basement once I had settled into bed. The next moments are obviously a little hazy to me as I was only 5 years old, but I promise you, these images will never leave my mind.
Oh, I'm so scared.
I have a feeling I'm going to get very stressed out about this.
I'm already stressed out because I read ahead.
I opened my eyes and there in front of me was a figure. I could see his outline because the door in my room was now opened and the light in the hallway was glowing around him.
Oh, God.
The figure was relatively large. As he got closer, I noticed he was wearing a stocking cap on his head and what I will never forget, a tool belt around his waist.
Oh my fucking God.
I can't be sure that there was anything in the tool belt, but I knew it was there. Luckily, I had the time and clarity to start screaming at the top of my lungs. I must have spooked him because he immediately fled from my room. My dad was able to get to my room relatively fast as I continued to scream. When he reached me, I told him what I saw. As most parents would probably do, he reassured me it was just a dream. However, as he was doing this, he heard a loud banging coming from the main floor. He ran to the sound and saw that our side door was broken into and was swinging open.
Oh my God.
That's all it took for him to call the police. I remember the police being in my room and me retelling them what had happened, but that's really where my memory ends. But here's what I was told. For the next week, we had a police presence at our house outside all day and night to protect us. My dad said at first they weren't sure how serious they should take the situation, but with the broken door and the way I described the man to them, the police felt like it was a real event. They said hearing those sort of specifics from a 5-year-old was not normal if it was just a dream. Also, I'd like to point out that this was the mid-80s, so, you know, prime kid abduction decade.
Yeah, what was with the 80s?
Yeah, what
and
the
abductions?
Fuck was up with that? It was like a real thing.
Yeah.
We never had another incident at our house, but within the next year, my dad decided he had had enough of Chicago. He bought a newspaper company in a small town in Wisconsin.
Fuck yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did, and our entire family moved hours north to this idyllic setting. When I say small, I mean it. I always hear people reference small towns, but you really don't know small towns until you see one. There were no stoplights, and I graduated with a class of 40 kids.
Oh my God.
Everybody knew absolutely everybody.
It sounds like where Drew is from.
For real. Honestly, I think I forget about the incident as I grew up. I never felt unsafe in our town, and it was a really nice place to grow up in that sense. We were out all day from morning until night playing, walked to and from our friends' houses unsupervised. However, I do remember forever teasing my dad about his safety protocols. He constantly locked all our doors at all times. Why would you ever need to do that in this town, we'd wonder. And at night, as he'd write his newspaper stories on the computer in the basement, he'd block out the windows because I think he was scared of being watched.
Honestly, feel that.
Yeah. In college, I found a shotgun in his closet. I was absolutely shocked. My dad was one of the most gentle souls I'd ever come in contact with. We lived in an area where hunting for animals was really prevalent, but he was a major animal lover and would never dream of doing that. Up until then, I wasn't sure my dad had ever even held a gun. When I found the gun, I brought it up to some good friends about how surprised I was. One of them turned to me and said, "Why would you be surprised? You were almost kidnapped as a child out of your own bedroom." And it hit me.
The honest friend.
Yeah, like, what the fuck? You were almost taken out of your bedroom.
They're like trauma bomb, remember?
Like, boom. And it hit me. I had completely forgotten about all of that because of the way my parents decided to raise us.
Aww.
Like, your parents literally made you forget about being almost abducted. That's how wonderful they
That's
were.
That's some parent shit right
that
there.
That is some A-plus parenting.
Truly.
I'm now the mother of a 5-year-old, and I cannot imagine the trauma my dad endured after having that almost happen to his child.
I know.
It didn't hit me until my friend reminded me of that. And then again, when I had a daughter. My poor dad was in the house when I was almost abducted, and it most likely affected him for the rest of his life. Absolutely.
I can only imagine.
He was such a good, kind, and gentle man. And I'm so grateful for how he protected me throughout my life. Oh my God, I love your dad.
I do too.
I'm so sorry that you lost your dad.
I am too.
Thank you so much for reading my story. And I'm sorry it isn't as humorous and witty as many of the listener tales are, which I love so much. But I'm still trying to crawl myself out of the hole I've been in. I hope I can also be funny again soon. Until then, thank you for providing me with your hysterical banter, engaging listener tales, and interesting true crime stories. Love you, ladies. Amy. You can go ahead and use my name. I'll be so excited if you actually read it. I'll want the notoriety.
Amy, Amy, Amy.
Hell yeah, Amy.
We love you, and we're so sorry for what you're going through.
And we're
right
sending
now.
You a huge, giant hug.
And we're literally not even huggers, so that's a big deal.
That's a huge deal.
We love you.
We freaking love you, Amy.
All right, next up, listener tales. I got possessed because I was too gay to say no.
Amazing.
That's iconic.
I'm ready for this.
Oh my God, already. Let's go. Hello, my beautiful ghoulish goddesses.
Love that.
My name is Pfeiffer.
Get the fuck out. That's an awesome name.
That's a sick ass
name.
Cool
name.
And then they said yes, like Michelle.
Yes.
And you may absolutely use my name.
Yes.
Okay, Pfeiffer. What a fucking cool name.
Holy shit.
Firstly, I need to tell you that I love your podcast. I'm chronically ill and spent a lot of time just writhing around in pain on various beds. So I don't really spend time with people outside of my roommates.
I'm so sorry
to hear that. Having a true crime podcast like yours in my ears has made even my worst days feel bearable. Oh. And I cannot thank you enough for how much of a positive impact you've both made on not only my life, but many lives in the community as well.
Aw.
Thank you.
Thank you. Man, you guys are like really pumping us up today.
I know, seriously.
I'm like, shit, let's record like 18 episodes today.
I'm getting all like, like
fuzzy.
Yeah, like shy. Like I feel shy.
Aw.
I've never felt shy. What the fuck? Your passion for the stories you tell, the compassion you hold for the victims, and the way you rip boneheads like BTK, you mean Shitflower?
Hell yeah.
to shreds is unmatched, and I truly hope you never forget how incredible you both are. Oh my God.
Pfeiffer.
Thank you. Fucking
jeez.
Pfeiffer. I love that.
Fucking
that's your
Pfeiffer.
Name. Ah, oh, I'm getting a new cat, and now I want to name it after you.
Right? Pfeiffer.
We like picked a name, but I'm like, Pfeiffer's a cool name.
Pfeiffer's a cool name.
I don't know, man.
Throw it into the hat.
I'm going to ask Drew.
Yeah.
All right. Now on to my tale. I've attached a double-spaced put-a-fall for you two to read because I know it's much easier. You're a real one.
You
Pfeiffer.
Are.
I'm going to say your name as much as possible. This is actually a story that I've sent in before, but I realized I left out some details, so I'm doing it again. It's quite long. As I'm a writer in my spare time, and I'm completely incapable of writing short things.
Same.
Elena. But it is pretty spooky. I hope you enjoy, and if I ever get to hear this on the podcast, I'll probably shit several bricks.
We'll get ready to make a wall out of those bricks.
Ew.
Ew.
A shit brick wall. All right, again, guys, this is called That Time I Got Possessed While Trespassing Because I Was Too Gay to Say No. All right, so strap in, babies. This one's kind of long and it's a total doozy, but it's one of my favorite stories to tell anyone who will listen. So without further ado, here we go. I love that you love to tell this to anyone who listen, and like a lot of people are going to hear this.
Yeah,
right,
a lot
now.
Of people are going to listen.
It's exciting. So, for some background, when this whole thing went down, I was 15 years old and a complete bisexual disaster who would do anything for a pretty girl. That's literally any 15-year-old bisexual. Like, you would do anything for a girl. Or a boy. The girl I was interested in at the time, we'll call her Emma, was in the grade above me, and she fancied herself to be an amateur photographer, which worked because I was into film and cinematography, so we had a lot to talk about. Her style of photography was about the disarray of humanity and architecture.
Oh.
And you're 15 and 16. Okay, badassery. She loved to find beauty and art in decrepit places.
Oh, cool.
So she would, I know, that is cool. So she would often break into abandoned buildings to snap her photos. She was driven by disorder and appreciated the rawness that she could observe while walking through the empty halls of places with thousands of stories tucked inside every crack in the structure.
Yeah, you are a writer, Pfeiffer.
Yeah, that's,
I this is already
that.
Great.
I'm looking at it. Emma wanted to use her photography to fill in the blanks for those stories. She She was also just, excuse me, she also just really loved, she also just really fucking loved breaking into places because I was overruled by hormones and gay panic, but also love for the thrill of committing petty crimes. Don't at me. I went along.
Don't at me.
I get it. At me if you at you. On these little break and enter, take some photos and hope to God the cops don't show updates. We would always go at sunset or late at night. Once her curiosity and memory card were satisfied, we would ghost hunt because we were a couple of dumb bitch teenagers.
Hell yeah.
I love the theme of dumb bitch. And
I know, I love it.
I've always been sensitive to the paranormal. My sister and I are both clairvoyant in different ways. You have to be clairvoyant if your name is Pfeiffer.
Pfeiffer, I knew you were clairvoyant.
Me too.
I think you sent it this way and like made me clairvoyant to know that.
Whoa.
I believe in you, Pfeiffer.
It was like a clairvoyant inception.
There you go.
Is that what that is?
Sure.
Question mark. Bye.
Bye.
So spirits don't always leave me be. So I was hoping to make some sort of contact here. And oh boy, did I fucking ever.
Uh-oh.
Emma's choice of haunt this night was an old factory in the middle of buttfuck nowhere. In our Midwestern state. This place had been up since the early 1900s and was later abandoned for horrible working conditions that resulted in several deaths. The most compelling death of all was that of the CEO, or whatever the 1900s version of a CEO was, who was reportedly involved with the Irish mob.
Oh,
potatoes. I'm Irish, I can say that. The story goes that he did something to piss him off, and one day, a member of the mob went to his office at the factory and killed him. There are varying accounts on how he was killed. Some say he was shot, some say he was thrown into a machine of his own factory.
Oh, damn.
Some say he wasn't even killed at all, and that his death was accidental. But either way, homeboy was dead.
I was going to say death occurred somehow.
Yeah, dead, dead, dead. I will try to paint a visual picture for you guys because the layout is important. Well, Pfeiffer, you're already good at that, so I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm ready.
It was a fairly small factory, square footage-wise, but it was quite a tall building. There were a set of metal doors on the outside, which led to a little lobby area. This part of the building was two stories, however. There was no floor/ceiling separating the two floors. So if you looked up from the lobby, you could see a few admin offices from behind the railing. Towards the back, there was a set of metal double doors that led to a short hallway, followed by another set of double doors that led into the factory. Below the factory, there was also a basement-type thing for storage or God knows what. This is all important, I promise.
I believe you.
This is how my brain works. I'm seeing the setup of where Steve Martin works in Father of the Bride. Anybody
okay.
else?
You see yeah. that? All right, kinda? Yeah. You know I get I mean? That.
Like how it's like the two floors?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
I get
awesome.
It.
Hell yeah.
I'm with you. That's a great movie.
I fucking love that movie, both of them. Mm-hmm. So Emma picked the pathetic rusted padlock on the door and we went in.
There you go.
We snapped some photos of the lobby area, then we went back up to the offices. We decided to ghost hunt and take photos at the same time. So I manned the shitty camcorder and she stole from her dad, and she had her Nikon out and ready. I need to note that this whole incident was captured on film. Oh my God. On
Stop.
Film.
Give me it now.
Unfortunately,
no.
Emma and I no longer speak, therefore I no longer have the footage, but I'll do my very best to describe the series of events to the best of my abilities.
Emma, are you out there? Give me the footage.
Here's the thing. If you are both still bisexual, I feel like you could reconnect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, lesbians are always friends with their friends.
There you go.
I can say that. About an hour into our investigation, Emma and I were up on the second floor in what we believe was the CEO's office. Where he was killed.
Uh-oh.
And we heard a noise from downstairs. Of course, our first reaction was, it's a ghost!
No, it wasn't.
What?
It wasn't.
Oh, God damn it. I was just so excited to yell. I go, what?
You're like, what?
I was like, you read it wrong. You're like, you're dumb. You dumb bitch.
You dumb bitch.
Of course, our first reaction was not, it's a ghost! I can still yell.
There you go.
It was, oh shit, it's the cops.
I was going to say, that's what I would think first.
Yeah, yeah. Because we were totally trespassing, on top of having literally broken into this building. We ducked down and waited with bated breath for several excruciatingly long seconds to see if any booming voices were going to tell us to come out with our hands up. But there wasn't a sound. Emma, obviously the brave bitch here, decided to go downstairs and check it out while I stayed put and stressed myself out.
There you go.
While I waited for Emma to return, I tried to look out the window to see if there were any cop cars or anything outside. But there was a tree from the...
Mesozoic.
Yeah, that era right outside. That was intimidating.
I saw you get to that. I saw that face change.
I don't want to read that. Mesozoic. Because, you know, I'm like really scarred from Nin. I'm like, Nin. If I don't know what that is, I'm not saying.
I'm not going to try.
System the Mesozoic of a Down era. Yes. Plus, the window was busted and dirty. And so what I could see was precisely jack shit. But I had a camera with night vision. So I was zooming in, zooming out, trying to see anything. You holding on to your butts? Because this shit is about to get real.
Oh, man.
While filming, I heard a sort of scuffling noise from behind me, and thinking it was Emma, I turned around to face her, and I woke up somewhere else.
What?
You woke, I missed the part where you were sleeping.
I was like, you, when did you sleep?
What?
When did you close your eyes?
Pfeiffer, wake
Pfeiffer,
up.
What's up?
I don't like this. Pfeiffer, wake up. Oh, that was good.
Okay. I hit that high. Yeah,
it was like it came up and down. Go, it was so hot right now.
So hot right now.
All right. Why you didn't got to? I opened my eyes and all I could see was blackness. I did the thing where you blink repeatedly because you think you've spontaneously gone blind.
We've all been there.
And proceeded to start screaming like a banshee in childbirth.
Whoa.
Oh, I like that. Never heard that one before. I spun around and in my panic, I made out the silhouettes of machinery and wires and shit. Not blind then. And I just started running. I was in near complete darkness, just sprinting blindly to fuck knows where. But eventually found the metal staircase that led me out of the basement through the factory where I ran into Emma.
What?
Emma started screaming at me, "Where the fuck have you been? I've been looking for you everywhere." I promptly grabbed her hand and started pulling her toward the exit. "We gotta go. We gotta go right the fuck now."
Oh, damn. If I was Emma, I'd be like, okay.
I'd be like, let's go.
Let's go.
I'd be like, I will yeet us out of here. So we grabbed our shit and we left. On the way home, Emma started asking questions, but I needed to get as far from as possible from this place before I was able to tell her what had happened. When we got back to her house, we smoked some of the married iguanas. I've never heard that either. Married iguanas? I love that. Have you heard that?
No.
Me either.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
Some of the married iguanas.
Married iguanas. And when I finally felt calm and stoned enough, I told her what I experienced in the factory. Obviously, she freaked out, so we decided to watch my camera footage. We skipped ahead to the moment I was alone in the office, and this is what we saw. My night vision was on, so I was filming the window, zooming in, zooming out like an asshole. Strangely, whatever noise I heard that made me turn around was not captured on the camera's audio. The camera was pretty shit, so it's not surprising. Then I flipped around and was filming the doorway. There was nothing there. Horrifyingly, this is the moment that I blacked out, but what we saw on the footage still gives me chills to this day. The camcorder was attached to my hand by the hand strap and wrist strap. My hand that was holding the camera drops down to my side. Oh, I'm like so freaked out right now. It's giving me Blair Witch vibes. So I'm now filming behind me and everything on the screen was upside down, which already is even scarier.
What's going to happen? I need to know.
Then I just started walking. I left the offices, went downstairs, somehow without alerting Emma, went through both sets of double doors into the factory area, descended the metal staircase to the basement, and parked my definitely not conscious ass in front of a wall where I stood for a very, very long time.
That's like you said, Blair Witch.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my God. Oh,
I hate it. It scares me so badly. Now, up until this point, Emma and I had not yet gone into the factory. I had no idea the layout of this place. So how the fuckity fuck did I go down there on my own without knowing how? I cannot explain it any other way than that something was definitely taking over my body.
What the fuck?
The scariest part is that from the time I blacked out in the office to the time that I woke up in the basement, 22 and a half minutes had passed.
So you're just staring? Just sitting there?
For 15 of those minutes, I was standing in front of a fucking wall, just Blair Witching it in the corner. I knew you were going to come out with that,
Fifes. You get it, Pfeiffer.
Utterly silent. So I just nicknamed you.
The Fifester. We have nicknames for you now.
The Fifester. I love that. You're officially the Fifester. Hope you like it. I do not remember this. When I think I can't even read.
It's so much.
When I think back on the incident, even now, that 22-minute period did not exist. It's suspended in black in my memory, and it was like I blinked and was suddenly in a completely different place.
Wow.
Without the camera footage, I would have never known what had happened to me, but I do remember the feeling I had when I woke up, thick and heavy, like when you wake up from a nap and you have no fucking clue where you are. It did not feel necessarily dark or evil in any sense, but it was definitely restless and confused. Same though.
I love that. Same though.
The Fifester said that, but honestly, I agree. I am restless and confused pretty much all the time. Elena can confirm.
Can confirm. Yeah. Will confirm.
The Fifester and Ash, restless and confused. Forget dazed and confused. We're just restless. Anyway, naturally, we tried our best to rationalize my experience. What we believe is that whomever or whatever possessed me was the spirit of someone, possibly even Mr. CEO himself, who died in the factory and was potentially never recovered, but we'll never know. Emma once asked me if I wanted to go back, and I immediately told her that I would rather slam my tongue in a car door and lock myself in an Iron Maiden than return to that fucking place.
Wow.
Wow, Fifester.
Damn.
Since then, the factory has been demolished, and I have searched for hours on any sort of public record for the same reason why, but I can't find anything on it. For the reason why. I don't know why I added the same in there. I will never know what happened there. I will never know what happened to me. And it has been a sense of frustration for almost 10 years. Fuck, I'm old. Either way, that's my story. I'm so sorry for the length, don't be. But I hope this was at least entertaining. It was at most entertaining.
It really was.
Keep it weird, but not so weird that... Take it away, Ash. But not so weird that you go into a factory with the girl that you think is super cute, and then you end up in the fucking basement away from that girl, and you don't even spend any time with her, and then you maybe got possessed, and, like, the Brother Witch might have been hanging out with you. At least you still have your eyebrows and your tongue, though, because you were, like, fully ready to stick that tongue in a car door, and, like, you... Yeah, I don't know. You should be thankful for it that the Blair Witch didn't get it. Love you, bye.
Wow.
That was a good one, right? Thank you.
You did. And you know what, Fifester?
The Fifester.
The Fifester. You're it.
You are.
You're it.
You're all of it.
You're the ultimate.
It's automatic.
I'm sure of it.
No lie.
So don't even try.
To tell me that you're not the...
guy.
Fifester.
Oh, the Fifester. I'm sorry. I was singing the real lyrics. Oh, okay.
I saw this TikTok the other day that was like, what is a song from a movie that, like, you consider a real song even though it's not a real song? And it was the one that they play, like, round and round.
Oh, yeah.
That's a real song by a different band.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Crazy.
Crazy.
I thought I was going to blow your mind.
You know what, the Fifester? What do you think? Did you also think that?
Did I blow your mind, Fifester? The Fifester?
The Fifester, you blew our mind.
Yeah,
for real. That was amazing.
For real, guys.
Dang.
All of you are just wilding.
All right, let's move on, I suppose.
Okie dokie, artichokey.
So this one says, listener tale. The afternoon my 5-year-old self spent at the beach with one of the 24 faces of Billy Milligan after one of his personalities committed serial rape and before he became an alleged murderer.
Oh, just that?
That's a title.
Okie dokie.
That is a title.
Okie dokie, Sarah.
Wow. Okay. Hey, weirdos, my name is Sarah, and you can use my basic white mom name because my daughters regularly inform me that I am indeed a basic white mom.
I'm going to be so pissed when my kids start saying that shit to me.
They will.
I'm going to be like, you don't even know.
Hey, I'm fine with that. I grew up wanting to fit in and be basic, so I guess I can say I achieved my dream. First off, I will say that I fell in love with your podcast during some of the darkest days of the pandemic. I have always been intrigued by true crime and especially anything spooky or weird. I was delighted to find the two of you,
Thanks.
And your weirdness helped me cope with the challenges of daily life, quarantined with 2 teenage daughters. I look forward to each new podcast with all the excitement of a basic white mom.
I love you.
For your reading pleasure, I have attached 2 PDFs. One is my listener tale, and another includes a solid start on research in case you decide to do an episode on Billy Milligan.
Are you fucking kidding me, Sarah? You're, like, way more than basic. You're fucking iconic.
Let's get you on the payroll. Let's go.
I mean, nobody's ever sent 2 putifas.
No.
I just want to put that out there.
His story is crazy and weird and disturbing, and I know that only the two of you can tell it in all its potential glory.
I definitely feel already that it's an Elena thing.
Yep. Thank you for adding light and intrigue and humor to my life. I appreciate you, weirdos.
We
always keeping it weird,
you.
Even if I'm a basic white mom, Sarah.
I bet you're an iconic white mom.
You are. All right, let's read this. So my listener tale is somewhat unremarkable in the telling of it, but once I add the who and the when, it starts to become interesting. Hang in tight with me for a second.
Okay.
I'm here. This last fall, I was scrolling through Netflix looking for something new and interesting to watch. The usual true crime, serial killer, unsolved mysteries type shows just didn't catch my interest. Then I noticed a new offering, Monsters Inside, the 24 Faces of Billy Milligan. Billy Milligan, the name caused me to pause, and then subsequently call my father to inquire about a fuzzy memory that was hovering on the edge of my mind. Sure enough, my memory was accurate. I spent a lovely, albeit likely somewhat awkward, afternoon at the beach with one of the 24 personalities of Billy Milligan. I would have been about 5 years old.
What?
How did this afternoon at the beach with a serial rapist and a future alleged murderer come about? I was wondering that.
We all were.
All because of my compassionate hippie father.
Go hippies.
And look at, there's a picture of you, your family, and you're so cute.
You're freaking adorable.
Oh my God, and your parents are adorable. I'm dying. I was born a flower child in the truest sense. My early years were spent living on the side of a West Virginia mountain with no electricity or running water, but lots of love and friends and music all the time. This isn't completely relevant to the story, but still, where else can I brag about my mad accomplishment of being potty trained using an outhouse? My family in 1976.
Fucking awesome. You're not basic at all.
You are a cutie patootie.
I know. Look at those cheekies.
And your dad is holding both you and your mom. And
oh,
I
wow.
Love, I just realized that.
Strong
and I love
man.
It. That's strong man.
Oh my God. You are so cute.
When I was about, what's crazy is you kind of look a little bit like Ash when Ash was little.
You know, I almost said that, but I do talk about myself a lot in a kind of narcissistic way, so I wasn't going to bring myself into it.
No, you do. And you were both really cute.
Oh, thank you.
When I was about 4 years old, I moved with my hippie music-playing parents to the hills of Athens, Ohio, so I could attend better quality schools. This is also when my father went to work as a psychiatric nurse at Athens Mental Health Center, where Billy Milligan became one of his patients in 1976, whoa. 1978.
This place looks sick. I mean, obviously it wasn't, but like, whoa.
I don't want to tell Billy Milligan's story, but I will share what my father told me about his experience with Billy and why we spent an afternoon at the beach. Billy had been tried for raping three women at Ohio State University, but was the first person to successfully use multiple personality disorder as an insanity defense, and as a result was transferred to a mental health facility rather than prison.
Mm.
At the Athens Mental Health Center where my father worked, Billy was able to walk the hospital grounds and visit the town unsupervised.
Ooh, that sounds like a bad plan.
My father remembers this being a point of contention with the hospital staff and the community.
I wonder why.
Some believed in his personalities and felt compassion for the horrific childhood experiences that may have led to Billy's psychosis. Others were skeptical and questioned whether he was putting on an act to fool everyone, including his doctors.
Well, and either way, like, you can definitely feel bad, like we say, for the child, yeah. But you don't have to send a rapist into town.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. My father saw him as a broken and abused young man and took him into the community on multiple occasions.
And I oop. Whoopsie.
I had to stop the recording because I was laughing so hard.
No, I'm sure your dad is just like a very compassionate man.
Exactly. Like, this is by no means against your dad. And also, honestly,
if it was me, I probably would have done the same fucking thing.
It definitely would. But also, your dad was a psychiatric nurse, so I'm going to trust his judgment.
Exactly.
Here. But that was just like a really funny.
Yeah, that was like my whole foot just inserted in my mouth.
That was proof positive that we have not read these before we read them out loud.
It was also a great use of "and I oop," if I do say so myself. That's actually the definition of "and I oop." Are the kids still saying that?
I'm literally crying. Okay, so
just remember who doesn't think you're basic. Okay,
you remember you are not basic. Your father was a very compassionate person. I'm sure.
I'm just gonna drink my ice drink at this.
One afternoon, my father brought him to the beach with my mother and I to enjoy swimming and sunbathing. Also, he's supervised here.
Yeah,
that's
so
the thing.
That's
we were
different.
Talking about letting him just wander into the community without anybody. Your dad is a psychiatric nurse.
And he's bringing him to the beach for a little swim. That's fine.
We were all right here. Everything is fine.
Yeah.
So I remember sitting in a blanket at the beach next to Billy, and a less comfortable memory of him and my father tossing me through the air to each other in the deeper water. Wow. Okay.
You were heated by this man.
Wow. Here is a picture of the beach at Strouds?
Strouds, yeah.
At Strouds Run State Park today. Beautiful.
Oh, that is really pretty.
Needless to say, I eagerly watched every episode of the Netflix Monsters Inside series about Billy. Other than Billy's core personality, Billy himself, my father believes he only witnessed one other personality of the remaining 23. This was his most violent personality, named Reagan.
Because of The Exorcist?
Probably. According to my father, Reagan emerged in one instance when a staff member was intentionally provoking Billy and he became enraged. Watching the Netflix series, I was shocked to learn about the possible murders that Billy may have committed after his time in Athens, Ohio. Did I spend my afternoon bringing light to a troubled, abused soul? Or was I subjected to time with a sociopath who manipulated my gentle father just to have a fun day at the beach?
I don't know.
Could be either, to be honest. Yeah. I can't tell you.
I need to know more.
So my question today, was Billy controlled by his multiple personalities, or was he a master manipulator and a, quote, brilliant narcissistic sociopath? I'm hoping you, Ash and Elena, can help me answer this.
Ooh, that's a big job, Sarah.
Ooh, I'm going to read this case.
Yeah, we're going to add that to the whiteboard.
For sure.
We've got time in November.
There you go. Look, so we're going to take a peek at it. And wow, what, to be able to look back and say that.
Seriously.
Like, that's really wild.
That's cray cray.
But I think that's the thing, those kind of situations, like the multiple personality thing, is they can manipulate so easily. It can be created so easily.
Yeah,
like, you know what I mean? But it's also with it. I was actually thinking of Split this entire time.
Of course you were.
Yeah,
great. But, fucking movie. I saw that in theaters and it shocked me to my core.
It's
unpopular,
so stressful.
Opinion though, or maybe not unpopular, I don't even fucking know, I don't like the end.
I don't either.
Cool.
And I don't even remember what the end was, but I remember not liking it.
I mean, I can say it because it was like came out like 5 years ago. It turns into that like whole superhero thing, and he like can't be stopped.
I know what it is.
Is it Marvel?
No. It's a prequel, I think, to Unbreakable.
Yes.
Which is like a serial killer. Lord.
Like a
superhero kind of thing. Yeah. So
I didn't like it.
I get why it happened. I don't know if I'm a fan of that whole thing.
Yeah. And it wasn't really like marketed as a prequel. Like I was like, I thought it was just a movie about like, I thought it was just a scary movie, you know?
I thought it was a scary movie.
But yeah, was that was M. Night, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that should have expected a twist.
Our dude M. Night.
M. Night.
You know, like the Fifester. We're all friends here.
I know. Let's go. Okay.
So all thanks, Sarah.
I'm going to go ahead and take my foot out of my mouth and introduce the next
that
one.
That was a wild tale. And also, Sarah, your fam is just the cutest thing I've ever seen.
No, like genuinely. And not just because he looked like me as a baby. All right. This one is called Why I Always Win, Two Truths and a Lie.
Ooh.
A listener tale. Hello, ladies. Here's my listener tale for hopefully one of your podcast shows. Feel free to read it all or part of it. I made sure to make it a putafa double spaced and size 14 font for your reading ease.
An icon.
Like, that's hot.
It is.
This part is not for the show. Bye. Okay, we're gonna move on.
There you go.
Greetings from the Great White North, aka Canada, or to be more specific, an itty bitty town called Port McNicoll.
There you go.
About 2 hours of Toronto north.
Just 2 hours of Toronto.
It's like away from 2 hours. My name is Danielle. Feel free to say it so I can brag to all my friends.
Danielle,
my belle.
We love a Canadian.
Oh, fuck. We might join you soon. I found your podcast while scrolling through the true crime section a couple of years ago. I saw the word morbid and my brain immediately took control of my hand and forced my finger to click on it because anyone who named a true crime podcast morbid was worth listening to.
Hell yeah.
Thanks. Then I got hooked on you wonderful ladies. Also, hello to Drew, John, and the Littles.
Thank you. They say hi back.
They said, hey. I wanted to write in for a Listener Tales episode for ages, but I'm going to be honest and say my overthinking every fucking little... hold on. And say my overthinking every fucking thing until all the fun is gone brain couldn't decide what tale to tell you.
Ooh.
I relate to that so hard. I mean, local ghost stories about drunken sailors playing soccer with the head of their decapitated friend.
Yeah,
that one. Working in a store that was haunted by a curious dog, that one. And hearing a very long-ass scream while staying in a haunted hostel in Ireland are just a few of my options.
We'd like all of those, please.
I pick D, all of the above.
Danielle, please.
Please. I decided to ignore those for now. How dare you? Although there will be a footnote about the soccer game because it's a Halloween thing, and I know you ladies are all about spooky season, so feel free to cut that part if you want.
No way.
I don't. I'd apologize about this being long and for the F-bombs, but I'm really not sorry.
And we would never want you to be.
I love you. My tale is about how I always win true truths.
True truths.
True truths. And a lie.
So to set the stage, I was about 25 and worked at a local store in the shipping and receiving department. Boring job, but I was there to save money for school, not to make a career of it. Every Christmas season, all the employees were split into groups for a month of manipulation and backstabbing. I mean, friendly competition. The group with the highest sales at the end of the competition won a small commission. Got it?
Got it.
This shit isn't complicated, and I'd be concerned if you were lost already.
I love you already.
You're funny. On the day my tale starts, the phone rang. Scary, right? Yes.
Terrifying.
Two scariest things in the world, your phone ringing and somebody knocking on your door.
Yep.
The voice on the other end was pleasant, very soft, and a little high-pitched. The man placed an order for some small thing. I can't remember what it was, but it doesn't make a difference in the story. He was chatty in that only mildly annoying way that nice customers tend to be. Then came the first kind of creepy thing. He was calling from the mental health facility one town over in... Thank you for the pronunciation key, but even that is fucking intimidating. Penetanguishen.
Yeah.
I did my best.
Yeah, it sounded good to me.
It was a massive complex and still is that houses everything from community outreach to the criminally insane. Fun fact, it actually sits on spit land named
Asylum. On a spit of land.
Yep.
It sits on spit land.
I was like, what's that?
What's spit land?
I'm going to be honest. I think I need new contacts because I'm like actually squinting at the screen. I'm going to blame it on that. Even though I've been doing it for 4 years.
Yeah, it's fine.
Fun fact, it actually sits on a spit of land named Asylum Point. It was common for the inmates whose families would supply them with an allowance to call and order things from local businesses. A driver would then go from the store to store every Thursday and pick up all the orders.
That's nice.
I know, that is nice. Now, there was no easy way to know why somebody was a guest at this place since most of them used an alias. I didn't question it. It was a sale and I wanted my team to win. No, I'm not super competitive, but my work nemesis was on the team just ahead of mine in the standings and I wanted to beat her into the ground.
Whoa.
I felt that. It was petty, but I'm sure I'm not the only one who's wanted to defeat someone they didn't like.
Are you a Capricorn?
A Capricorn, a Gemini, a Scorpio, or... Yeah, I think that's probably it. Mm. Or an Aries. Over the next few weeks, he called back about half a dozen times. Each order was bigger than the last. During our last phone call, he asked me for my full name. I only ever gave my first to customers as a rule. And address, so he could send me a tip.
That's a no.
A fucking klaxon.
Klaxon horn?
Klaxon horn went off in my head, and a silver robot waved his arms around screaming, Danger! Lost in Space reference. Sorry, I speak in movie and TV references and song lyrics sometimes.
I love that.
So do we. I told him to send it to the store and that my boss would make sure that it got to me. Little did I know that one of my helpful coworkers had already supplied my business card to the driver. So he got my full fucking name anyway. Gotta love coworkers.
Yeah, gotta love them.
I love my coworker.
I love mine.
I'm just kidding. Not about loving you. Wow. Anyways, I don't know. My foot's still in my mouth.
It is.
At this point, he got even chattier and told me he was being transferred to a medium security facility for prolonged treatment for something. Probably wouldn't call me again and was very grateful for all of my help. I was in customer service, so I did the song and dance we all do for the customers. Hope things go well. Too bad you're going so far away. Blah, blah, fucking blah.
Retail, am I right?
You know, I've never worked a retail job.
I know, that's wild.
I know, but I was a waitress, so I fucking made up for it.
That's true.
That Thursday, the driver showed up with an envelope with my name on it. Inside was a $10 bill. Score! Okay, wondering how this is scary. Be patient, it's coming. A coworker saw my pretty $10 bill and asked me about it. I explained that a patient had sent it to me. Was I not lucky? I told her his name, and she asked who it was. This was the day I found out that the color drained from their face wasn't a literary exaggeration. The look on her face actually made me scared of some unknown thing, like the time another coworker had started screaming as she ran from the room. You bet your ass I was right behind her screaming all the way. That time it was a bad, not scary, I guess, but she was a bit phobic.
Yeah. Like, I just ran.
Really? How many of us don't run screaming from the room when a bat dive bombs our heads?
All of us do.
We like literally just had that experience and I thought that it was a bat that flew into the home. It was a bird.
It was a bird. It was a tiny little bird.
But it was dark in color.
It was dark in color.
And it flew right past me and one of the kids in the bathroom as I was doing their hair. Thank God I wasn't cutting their hair. That's all I have to say. Anyway, she said two tiny fucking words that changed everything. Google him.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Okay. There was no way I was not going to look him up. I also wasn't going to wait until I got home. This was before we had computers in our pockets. Yes, I am that old.
I feel that.
And broke the no personal internet use at work rule and typed his name in, Russell Johnson. Up popped page after page of hits, all saying the same thing. The bedroom strangler. 11 known assaults, 7 known rapes and murders.
What?
Holy shit, I had been sharing friendly chats with a fucking serial killer. Then it hit me. He knew my name and where I worked.
Oh, no.
The serial killer, whose MO was to follow female victims home from work, bus stops, or stores, knew where I was.
Oh, no, no, no.
That $10 got dropped in the first donation bin I found because it was just too creepy to keep it.
Oh.
You might be wondering how my coworker knew his name. Well, it turns out one of his last victims was supposed to be her mother, but he got the floor wrong while pulling an evil fucking Spider-Man up the outside of the building and killed her upstairs neighbor instead.
Oh my God.
Yep. This pond scum monster in human form had literally scaled the outside of a multi-story building, or excuse me, scaled the outside of multi-story buildings to get his victims after following them home. Are you fucking kidding me?
I am horrified.
You think you're safe on the fourth floor? Think again. Where there's an evil will, there's an evil way.
Oh!
Obviously, I'm still alive, so this story had a happy ending for me. I got out of that job shortly after this happened and moved on to better and serial killer free things. His story didn't go so well. He lived up to his evil status and was soon removed from the medium security institution and returned to high security lockdown. To this day, he remains there, chemically castrated and safely locked away from society.
Damn.
And that, boys and girls, is how I always win at Two Truths and a Lie. I've had actual conversations with and got tipped by a serial killer. It still creeps me out to this day that I cannot sleep with any window in my home open. Good. I don't even care how hot and humid it gets. And Canada in a heat wave can be deadly. It's the humidity that gets you.
Oh, I feel that, especially this week.
Oh my goodness, for real. Oh, and my team totally won the competition, which made up for the tip that I couldn't bear to keep.
Hell yeah.
All right, so if you want me to stop here, I can. I won't hold it against you. Okay. To lighten the mood, here's a cute picture of my cat, Leonard Nimoy.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Nimoy.
So cute. Yeah, Nimoy. I figured I said it wrong.
As promised,
more on the soccer game mentioned earlier. If you're ever in my neck of the woods around Halloween and want a good scare mixed with a healthy dose of real ghost stories, try Pumpkinferno at Discovery Harbor.
I'm there.
Pumpkinferno?
I am there.
You had me at Pumpkin. It is a restored military and naval base from the 1800s and is just below Asylum Point, which adds to the creepiness. Although visiting the place the rest of the year, you can still get a little spooky. They go all out for Halloween. The story of the soccer match has been told for decades. It's about a group of sailors who got in an argument after a night of drinking and murdered their friend. They decided there was only one thing to do in the middle of the night when you're drunk with a decapitated corpse. They decided to play a game of bloody soccer. And before you ask, yes, the workers have been,
They have been known to recreate.
Have been known to recreate the game minus the murder.
Oh my gosh.
Jesus.
I need to see this.
Thank you for the amazing podcast.
Need to.
Danielle, thank you for the two amazing stories.
Wow.
Holy cannoli.
Wowzers, Danielle.
Oh my goodness.
That was intense. All these people that have had some kind of contact with a serial killer is wild to me.
I know. I feel like we need to do like so many more installments
we
of the
really
time
do.
That a murderer or like wasn't like had a involvement with them.
Truly.
So cray cray.
Whew. Oh man. Okay. So this is the last one. And I think it's a good one.
Okay.
I'm going to say burlap clad hunchbacks in the Bridgewater Triangle want to rub sand in your eyes.
I've heard that. I've heard that before.
Let's do this.
I have never heard that before.
I'm ready. All right. Hey, Elena and Ash. First off, I love the podcast to a degree that some might find unhealthy, but hey, screw them.
Screw them.
I just can't get enough true crime and spookiness in my life, I guess. This is actually the second story I've sent because I've had a few notably weird experiences in my 36 years, and I guess I want to fill your mailbox with spooky spam. Please
do.
That's not
even spam.
It's welcome. I'm a fellow masshole hailing from Swampskit and love to hear that distinct accent and special brand of banter. I miss so much now that I live in Los Angeles.
Aw, wait, is Swampskit a place or is that like a play on words?
No, that's a place.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah. You call yourself a masshole?
I know, right?
My name is also Ashley. Hey. I don't go by a nickname unless you're my grandpa, and for some reason you thought Ashcan was a cool thing to call your firstborn grandbaby.
Yeah, why do people call us that? I also hate when people assume that you either do go by a nickname or you don't go by a nickname. Like, if you say, like, hi, I'm Ashley, and they're like, hi, Ash, you're like, I didn't say that.
Yeah.
But sometimes I say, hi, I'm Ash, and people are like, hi, Ashley, and I'm like, I didn't say that.
You're like, I didn't introduce myself as that. Feel free to use my name if you read this in an episode, and I'll change the names of the others involved because, frankly, I don't speak to them anymore.
Okay. Iconic.
Now to the story.
Fuck them, right?
Yeah. This encounter happened during my last year of art school amidst the hellish time of working on my senior thesis in animation. Ooh. I was super overwhelmed, drawing my ass off day and night, and even experienced the first panic attack I'd ever had. So, of course, when my boyfriend asked if I could help with his project, I obviously said yes, because sure, I have tons of free time to spare, my dude. To put my workload in perspective, I spent that entire year on 2 minutes of hand-drawn animation.
Oof.
Sorry for all the capitals and such, but I type the way I talk, which is very punctuated and East Coasty. Yeah. I feel that. My boyfriend at the time was mildly obsessed with the paranormal, especially the East Coast variety. For his project, he had reached out to a local ghost hunter slash spooky expert who hosted a radio show on the South Shore.
Oh, shit.
We were going to tape some interviews with Tom, the host, to be guests and be guests on his radio show and spend the whole day with the paranormal expert. You know, like you do. The station was located in a town on the South Shore, smack dab in, you guessed it, the motherfucking Bridgewater Triangle.
South Shore.
So blah, blah, blah. Fast forward. We did the interviews, radio show. Yes, I was shit my pants nervous on the air. And we packed up all our gear for the day. It was well past dark when we were done, and we were so ready to go home and have a beer. Turns out, spending the day with a paranormal expert is super draining, and I didn't have many fucks left to give anyway. We packed up the car and got to driving. My boyfriend Chris was driving. I was in the passenger seat, and our friend Mike and Eric, Chris's brother, were seated in the back. I know you ladies know what it's like driving around the heavily wooded areas in that part of the state. Mm-hmm. You sometimes don't pass another car for miles on end. There are no streetlights and you're surrounded by thick black forest on either side of the road. Oh yeah. None of us were really talking much and we were all a little pooped. The road we were on was a narrow two-way street in some deep, dark butthole of the Bridgewater Triangle.
That could be like any of the streets around there.
I was spacing out, staring out the front windshield when out of fucking nowhere, something crossed in front of our car. The only light illuminating this creature were the headlights of a shitty Celica or whatever we were driving. I will never forget this thing, even though I only saw it for a few seconds. From out of the forest, on the left-hand side of the road, a hunched-over creature on two legs started scurrying across the street. It was about 3 feet tall, seemed to have a hunchback, and was wearing what looked like a robe made of burlap.
Like, why do fucking puckwudgies sound so cute, though?
They do. My brain screamed, that's a deer, right?
Nope.
But no way. I've seen plenty of deer in my time to know this ain't no deer.
They usually
don't wear robes.
I've never seen a deer in a robe.
I can tell you we have a lot of deer in our yard. Never seen one in a robe.
Nah, they like to be naked.
What I remember most about the creature was the unnatural way it moved on two legs. Mm. This burlap hunchback moved like nothing I'd seen before, extremely fast and so smoothly across the pavement. My entire body froze up and I went into complete shock. It felt as if I were having a sleep paralysis episode, which you ladies know is the literal worst.
Oof.
The first car we had seen in miles turned onto the street, and the second its headlights hit this creature, it disappeared. I was shook.
What?
Still paralyzed and unable to speak, my boyfriend noticed the intense reaction I was having and put his hand on my leg. He repeatedly asked if I was okay, and the other two joined in on making sure I wasn't having a stroke or something. When I regained my motor skills and speaking abilities, I was able to explain what I had just seen. No one else in the car saw this thing. I couldn't believe that I was the only one. I mean, Chris never hit the brakes once because he obviously didn't see the burlapped hunchback demon crossing the road. But it was clear from my detailed description and entire body response that I was not full of shit. Suffice it to say, I probably had 100 beers that night and didn't sleep a wink.
And now you had no fucks left.
None. Fast forward a bunch of years and I'm watching some shit on Netflix or Prime as usual with a different boyfriend we'll call Sean. I popped on a super low budget documentary about the Bridgewater Triangle and all of a sudden I scream, whoa! That's Tom.
Hey, oh, as soon as you said radio show, yeah. I was like, are you talking about the guy from that documentary?
That's what I was thinking of. It was the paranormal investigator we had interviewed that night, and he was in this weird documentary. Interest peaked. Anyway, they covered all sorts of sightings and cryptids seen in the forest, and then they started talking about Pukwudgies.
Knew it was a Pukwudgie.
Pukwudgie translates to, according to some dude named Henry Schoolcraft, little wild man of the woods that vanishes.
I love that. Little wild man of the woods that vanishes. Nine, eight. I just looked at my eight fingers and said nine. That's where I'm at. Means Pukwudgie.
Yeah. It makes sense. Sound familiar? Yeah, I completely shit myself. Every description I heard in that documentary was almost identical to what I had seen. When you Google image search Pukwudgie, obviously I immediately did, you are met with pictures and drawings of little brown hunchback creatures on two legs.
Mm-hmm.
A Wikipedia article on Pukwudgies describes, quote, they are known to kidnap people, push them off cliffs, attack their victims with short knives and spears, and use sand to blind their victims.
Whoa.
Another source, nativelanguages.org, states, Pukwudgies have magical powers which vary from tribe to tribe, but may include the ability to turn invisible, confuse people, make them forget things, or bring harm to people by staring at them.
I hate that.
This one hit a little too close to home for me. I sometimes think that maybe because I had spent the whole day in a spooky state of mind that somehow I was open to this creature.
Probably.
Nevertheless, I'm so glad the little fucker didn't blind me with sand. I'm gonna end this already because it's incredibly long and I'm so sorry.
Never.
Anyway, I hope you liked this story enough to read it on the podcast, and it gave you some full body shivs. Thank you so much for doing what you do. Never stop and stay weird, but not so weird that, take it away, Ash.
Not so weird that you have to do this project. Actually, you have to do your own project, and you're like, actually, fuck it. Instead of doing my own project, I'm going to do my boyfriend's project, and my boyfriend's project is to go talk to this guy, Tom, who's from this weird documentary, but I haven't realized that, and he has a radio show, and he's a paranormal guy, and then on the way home, I see this Pukwudgie, and I'm like, oh my god, that's a fucking Pukwudgie. And then years later, I watch a documentary and I see Tom all over again. And you're like, holy crap. Oh my gosh, a Pukwudgie. I saw it. I'm glad it didn't blind me with sand. Keep it that weird. Or don't. It's your choice.
I'm glad it didn't blind me with sand.
Wow.
Ashley, that was a good one.
That was so weird for
a second. I was not talking to you.
I know. I was like, what?
You're like, what now?
I don't think you have called me Ashley in like fucking 20 years.
I can't even remember the last time I called you Ashley.
Ashley.
But this Ashley.
That was crazy.
Well done.
Fucking whoa.
I think it's great to end on a Pukwudgie.
I think it's great to end on the fucking spaceship that is soaring outside right now.
I know. I don't know if you guys can hear it. It might be another thunderstorm.
Oh, no, that's John bringing the barrels in.
No, it's not trash day. No, it is.
Yeah.
It's Wednesday, isn't it?
I was like, why is he bringing the barrels in then? Because that's what that is.
You know what? I don't know what day it is.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, did you not put out your trash? All right, well, we should go.
Okay, all right. So anyways, we hope that you keep listening.
And we hope you
keep
it.
But that's where you didn't put your trash barrels out. Bye. Fuck my life.
Bye.
If you like Morbid, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Hey, Morbid, this is Weirdos.
Since Elena betrayed me and didn't go through with our brilliant plan for opening episode 544, The Career Girl Murders Part 1, we thought that we'd get it right with this go-round, as we tell you about one of our favorite deep dives that you might have missed within our feed.
In August 1963, Patricia Tolles returned home from work to find her apartment demolished. Shaken, she contacted one of her roommate's fathers, who stumbled across a truly grisly murder scene.
The media created a narrative that would, to their benefit, sell newspapers.
Every headline set out to make single women feel afraid and deter them from pursuing personal independence, instead of focusing on how people are depraved and that we should stop assholes from being assholes. You can find this episode by following Morbid and scrolling back a little bit to episode 544, The Career Girl Murders Part 1, or by searching Morbid Career Girls wherever you listen to podcasts.